Operation Los Angeles Green. Our show this morning is dedicated by Helen Bikin in commemoration of the Yahrzeit of Hal's father, Moshe Ben Yosef. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah. Thank you. All right. So, Moshe, we left off yesterday at the two dots. Tana Rabbanan, Yurchas Amud Beis. Tana Rabbanan. Beis Shammai Omer Lom Yimkar Adam Cheftzol Benachri. Beis Shammai says a person may not go ahead and sell an item to a non-Jew. Velo Yashilenu. Now, obviously, it's all talking about an Erev Shabbos. Velo Yashilenu. And may not go ahead and lend him something. Velo Yilavenu. And may not allow him to borrow something. Velo Yilavenu. And should not go ahead and lend him something. Velo Yitin Lobo Matana. Nor should he give him a gift. Ela Kideshi Agila Beisel. Unless, of course, the non-Jew has enough time to be able to get to his home prior to the beginning of Shabbos. The concern over here, take a look at Rashi. Ela Kadeshi Agio, Rashi says, Hanachri Labeso mi ba'od yom. Unless, of course, the non-Jew is going to have time to get to his house while it's still day before the onset of Shabbos. Va'af al gav debididei katarach. And even though what? Even though the non-Jew is doing, this is his own thing. He's not doing anything for the Jew. Nevertheless, Beis Shammai's concern is Machmir Beis Shammai, the Mechlif Bishlucho. That since they're transacting business so close to Shabbos, somebody who sees this could think that the non-Jew is the Shaliach, is the agent of the Jew. And this, of course, would be problematic. To have a non-Jew be doing things for you over Shabbos, which Sugi will get into, is problematic. Therefore, says Beis Shammai, unless, of course, the non-Jew could get back to his home. So then it's clear that what he did for himself. You may not transact these transactions on Erev Shabbos. Ubeisil, Omer Beisil says, Kedei Shagir Labayis HaSamach L'choma. Beisil says he doesn't have to get all the way home, but he has to be able to get to the first home within the wall of his city. So essentially, the first home within the wall of his city is close enough, right? Close enough that he'd already be getting to a place where, technically speaking, he could deposit whatever the object would be. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kedei Sheyetzi Mipesach Beiso. Rabbi Akiva says, no. He doesn't have to reach the first home within the wall of the non-Jew city, but rather what? As long as he's able to leave the Jew's home prior to the onset of Shabbos, that's enough. Amar Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, hein divrei Rabbi Akiva, hein divrei Beis Hillel. So now Rabbi Yossi says that Rabbi Akiva is not coming to argue on Beis Hillel, but rather what? He's coming to explain the position of Beis Hillel. Rabbi Akiva is saying that in reality, according to Beis Hillel, the non-Jew does not actually have to reach anywhere outside, except the only thing we need the non-Jew is to leave the home of the Jew before Shabbos. Because again, if he's in the home of the Jew on Shabbos, then of course it looks like he's transacting business on behalf of the Jew. But as long as he's free and clear before the onset of Shabbos, Beis Hillel says it's no problem to engage in these transactions prior to the onset of Shabbos. So the Gemara will say Rabbi Yossi is a different explanation of Beis Hillel. That was one Amora's explanation of Beis Hillel. Rabbi Yossi is giving, Rabbi Kiva is giving a different one. So the Gemara says, Now on this same theme, Beis Shammai says, Lo yimkar adam chemtzol lenachri. A Jew may not go ahead and sell his chametz to a non-Jew. Ela imkin yodea bo sheyichle kodem haPesach. Unless, of course, what he knows that the chametz is going to be finished before Pesach. Right? Meaning, because again, the same issue according to Beis Shammai, that if a non-Jew has chametz that was formerly a Jew's on Pesach, one may think that he's holding on to it for the Jew over the course of Pesach, which of course could be problematic. And therefore, Halacha Maaseh, Beis Shammai says, you can only sell it if the chametz is going to be consumed before Pesach. Beis Hillel says, no, not true. As long as you can eat it, you can sell it. Which is another way of saying that you could even go ahead and sell chametz to a non-Jew, even on Erev Pesach, which clearly means that halacha lemaisa, the chametz will still be in existence on Pesach, but Beis Hillel says, who cares? At the end of the day, as long as it's not yours, the fact that it's in existence doesn't matter to us. Rabbi Yehuda says, top of your test, Kusach HaBavli, Babylonian Kusach. We spoke about Kusach, remember, in Brachos. So Rashi points out over here, Nostin bo chametz kedamrina be'ilu ovrin, ve'eno asrei le'echol yachod ele litzbol bo ve'eno kol azman merubah. So kusach, remember, was made out of the curdled milk, right, and a whole bunch of other types of those types of ingredients. Kusach had a very long shelf life. So the Gemara points out to Rabbi Yehuda says that kusach habavli, which often lasted long, and he says in reality the chomini kusach, all types of kusach, aser limkor lamid yom kol de pesach. You may not go ahead and sell them, right, within 30 days before Pesach. Rashi says the following: mishem aschilin lidrosh pilchos haPesach. So this is really still reflecting the opinion of Beishanai, that the chametz of a Jew may not be in existence even if it's in the possession of the guy come Pesach. Therefore, there is a moratorium on kusach sales within 30 days before Pesach, because kusach ultimately would have a very long shelf life, and if you're selling within 30 days, there's a real possibility that it may still be in existence at the time that Pesach starts. So, of course, we don't pask in this way. We pask in, like Beis Hillel in this case as well, that for us, it doesn't really matter if the chametz is in existence. What matters is what? That it's not in your reshus. That's what matters. Like, Tan Rabbanon. Ein no, excuse me, nosnin, mizonos tefnei akele b'chotzer. You are permitted on Shabbos to go ahead and put out food, right, for a dog in your chotzer. It's not talking about your dog. It's just talking about stomach dog. So you're permitted to put food out in the chutzah. We'll discuss why that is. I will say, under normal circumstances, you're really not permitted to feed an animal that's not your own. We'll discuss why, but part of the possibility is that it might be a told of tzad, of tzed, of hunting. Because part of the way that you would trap an animal is to put out food. So even though your intention over here is not to trap the animal, nevertheless, one is not permitted to go out and feed animals that are not their own. Which is why, by the way, interestingly enough, there's a lot of discussion. There's some of a custom on Shabbos Shira to go ahead and feed the birds. And feed the birds is a big discussion, halacha. And now, whenever you see a custom that's so widespread, it came from somewhere. But the reason why it's so fascinating is because, according to many opinions, one is not permitted to do that on Shabbos. The only animals you're permitted to feed are the animals that are your responsibility. Nevertheless, we'll see why. The Braisa says that one is permitted to feed a dog on Shabbos, not lo, and if the dog takes the food, the yotze, and goes out of your chatzar, ain't this kakinlo, we don't care. Right? You don't care, meaning we don't say that the dog is now taking, the dog is now carrying your item outside. Whatever it is, the dog will do it. So Rashi says over here, Kelev, Rami Ale Lezono. Listen to this. Interestingly enough, Rashi says, the Gemara says, that a person has an obligation to feed stray dogs. Now, why is that? So apparently, and Tosis points this out as well, which is that apparently dogs were traditionally underfed in the days of the Gemara. So it was just a din of Tsar Bali Chaim. So when you saw a stray dog, there was a mitzvah to go ahead and feed the dog. And therefore, even though it's not your animal, nevertheless, says Rashi, you have an obligation to feed it. So the idea that the Gemara is pointing out, although it doesn't need to be stated, the next case what needs to be stated is, even if the dog takes your chametz and takes it out, and quote-unquote carries it out, that's obviously not a problem for you. Similarly, says the Gemara, if you were to give food to a non-Jew, let's say a non-Jew is in your chatzar, and you give him food, not lo, if he takes it, the yotza, and he goes out with the food, ein niskakin lo. Ein niskakin lo means we don't get involved in it. So meaning, even though, again, technically speaking, this is my food that I'm not giving it. And maybe it looks like the reason why the Gemara is bringing this up is because, remember, Beis Shammai just had this whole problem in the previous price, in our Mishnah, and the previous price is saying that we don't want people transacting business too close to Shabbos, because it looks like the non-Jew is carrying out some kind of agency for the Jew. So I might have thought the same thing applies when carrying out the food. Kamashmo, no. So the Gemara says, Hasulamali. Why do we need both of these cases? Meaning the truth is, you made the point with the dog, as strange as it sounds, that once the food is out, once you give it over to another entity, what does it matter if it's a person or it's an animal? You've given it over. And once you've given it over, it's not yours. Whatever that new entity, either person or animal, decides to do with it, is their own business. To which the Gemara says, Hainuach, it's the same case. Now the time, what I've thought. Ha Rami Ale, ha lo Rami Ale. I might have thought the following. I don't have an obligation to stamp feed the non-Jew. I don't have an obligation to give him food. But I do have an obligation to feed the stray dog. So I might have thought that because I have an obligation to feed the dog, then halacha lemaisa, I'm permitted to put it out, even though it's going to be transferred to another reshus. But maybe with the non-Jew, it's not my responsibility, so maybe again, I shouldn't give it to him if I know he's going to transfer it to another reshus. Kamashon, that we're not concerned about that. Kamashon, that once you give food to another person or another entity, it doesn't matter what they decide to do with it is their own business. Tan Rabbanan. Lo yaskir adam kelav lenachri be'erev Shabbos bedalad vehei. Excuse me, be'erev Shabbos. A person may not rent his utensils to a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos. On Erev Shabbos, Rashi says, lo yaskir adam kelav la'asos bahen malacha be'erev Shabbos. A person should not rent his utensils to a non-Jew to do malacha with them on Erev Shabbos. Dinira shemaskiro lo l'tzorach Shabbos. Because it has the appearance that what? That you're renting out your utensils to be used on Shabbos. Now, I will say, this, we'll see, we're going to qualify or clarify what this means. This could be according to Beis Shammai, who holds that what? Shvisas Kelim, right? Even though we Halacha Maisa don't accept this, but the Gemara is not up to that yet. So, again, it could be that Beis Shammai holds that your Kelim have to rest also. If you go ahead and you begin to give off your Kelim on Erev Shabbos, it looks, or simpler approach, which is according to everybody, is it looks like that maybe you're going ahead and lending these utensils to the non-Jew, why? For him to do some kind of work for you over the course of Shabbos. However, bedalit ubehei, if you give it to him on Wednesday or Thursday, mutter, then it's mutter. Ki yotzebo, similarly, ein mishalchin igoros b'yav nochri b'erev Shabbos. Similarly, you may not go ahead and send a letter with a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos. However, bedalit ubehei mutter. But on Wednesday and Thursday, it's mutter. Now, why is that? Because the assumption is that if you're sending it out on Shabbos, what does it look like? It looks like you're dafka instructing him to go ahead and deliver this on Shabbos, and he's doing malacha for you on Shabbos. Wednesday or Thursday, it's far enough out that he has plenty of time to get the job done before Shabbos. Amru alav al Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, va'amri li al Rabbi Yossi HaChassid. So some say about Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, or others say it wasn't Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, it was Rabbi Yossi HaChassid. By the way, some say that Rabbi Yossi HaKohen and Rabbi Yossi HaChassid were the same person. Okay, whoever it was. Shalom nimtza ksav yodo biad nochri me'olam. Interestingly enough, that he never sent a letter with a non-Jewish carrier. Rashi points out over here, shalom nimtza ksav yodo, shalom yolichene b'Shabbos. He had a fear that the non-Jew may deliver it on Shabbos. Now again, remember, we'll discuss, if you give the letter to the non-Jew and he has plenty of time to do it before Shabbos and he does it on Shabbos, that's his own prerogative. Rabbi Yossi was afraid of what it looked like. He was afraid that if it turns out that the Nachri delivers it on Shabbos, one may erroneously think that Rabbi Yossi actually instructed him to do this. Tanu Rabbanan. The Braisa says the following. Both said very important Braisa. Ein Mishalchin Igeres B'yad Nachri Erev Shabbos. You may not send a letter with a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos. Ele imkein kotzeitz lo damin. Unless, of course, you establish a wage, you establish a price with him. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi. Ele imkein kotzeitz lo damin. Dechevan, de kotzeitz lo damin, dechevan de kotzeitz lo damin. Since you go ahead and you establish a price with him, bididei tarach. He is working on his own. I will say, what does this mean? When you hire someone to do things, there are two ways you can hire them. You can pay them hourly. You can pay them out, right? So whatever amount of time they work is the amount of time they get paid. Or you can give them a fixed amount. A fixed amount. Now, what's the chilik between that? So what the Gemara wants to say is the following. When somebody is on the clock, so then the idea is, the goal is to get the process done as quickly as, I guess, yeah, from the employer's perspective, right? It's to get it done as quickly as possible. So if I give it to you Erev Shabbos, I want it done immediately. As opposed to when there's a particular amount that's given. The message that's given is, listen, just get the job done. I don't care how you do it, when you do it, where you do it, but do it. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that halacha lemaisa, if you go ahead and you give the letter to the non-Jew on Erev Shabbos, and katzatz lo damin, you tell him, I'm giving you $10 to go ahead and get this process done, then ultimately, when the non-Jew goes ahead and even does it on Shabbos, Rashi points out, he's doing it on his own in order to acquire his wage. He's not doing it, he's not considered to be the shaliach of the Jew. And therefore, one would be permitted to go ahead and send it even close to Shabbos. Beis Shammai says, k'dei she'agia lebeiso. I will say, this verse is going to be a little bit...
How does the rest of the world
go? Oh, we're going to see. Good. We're not taking care of the Marasayan issue. Good. Beis Shammai says like this. Kedei she'agi. Did I finish that Rashi? Okay. Well, we'll read the Gemara first. Beis Shammai omrim kedei she'agi elabeiso. Beis Shammai says, you have to whatever you're going to do on Erev Shabbos with a non-Jew, there has to be enough time for the non-Jew to reach his home. Ubeisiro omrim kideshi agia lebayis hasamach lechoma. And Beis Hillel says he doesn't have to get all the way home. He just has to get to the first home within the wall of his city. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. V'halo katzatz. But the Braisa doesn't make sense. Because the beginning of the Braisa was what, Rabosai? The beginning of the Braisa was that he established a price with the non-Jew. And we assume that, Rabosai, let me give you one word of background on this. The idea is that the only time that instructing a non-Jew to do malacha on Shabbos is problematic is when the non-Jew is doing it for himself. But these two words are very important. Bedidei kadarech. If what the non-Jew is doing, he's doing for his own benefit, then halacha lemaisa, that's not called amira lenachri. That's not called instructing a non-Jew, even though what? The Jew may end up benefiting from what it is that the non-Jew is doing. Since what motivates the non-Jew is that he wants money. He wants to get paid. He's not doing it for me, not because he's actually not because, but he wants the money. So what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that's not called amira lenachri. Now, don't be fooled by my overly simplistic explanation of this. So this is obviously a very complicated topic, but the Gemara is suggesting over here is therefore halacha lemaisa, if I instruct a non-Jew before Shabbos to do something, but I set a wage with him. So this way again, if he ends up working on Shabbos, it's for him and it's not for me, then halacha lemaisa, that's going to be okay. Now, I'll throw one other point, because let me address this question now, which is, all of these cases presuppose that it's not clear to the onlooker that what he's doing is being done for a Jew. Right? That the activity that he's engaging in, at least the way it looks to the world, doesn't have Jew written all over it. If it would have Jew written all over it, and we'll discuss, like these are the famous cases with dropping your car off at the mechanic before Shabbos, right? And saying, I need it on Motzai Shabbos. Or having people come to do work on your house on Shabbos. This is all going to fall into this sugya. So this presupposes that whatever is being done ultimately is not clearly linked to me as the Jew. Amar of Sheshes, Hachikam. So Sheshes, here's how you have to appreciate, understand the Braisa. So what does the first part of the Braisa say? First part of the Braisa says is you can't send a letter with a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos, but if you established a wage, then halach lamais you can, because then when the Jew does, non-Jew does it over Shabbos, he's working for himself. So now the Gemara explains, Amar of Sheshes, Hachikamar. This is how you're supposed to read the Braisa. V'imlo katzatz, and if you did not establish a wage with the non-Jew, Beis Shammai says, ad shiyagia lebeiso. So Beis Shammai says that if there's no established wage, you can only transact business with a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos if the non-Jew has enough time to get to his home. Beis Hillel says, ad shiyagia lebeis asamuch lechoma. And he doesn't have to get all the way home, but he does have to get to the first house within the wall of his city. The Ha'amrit Reisha Ein Mishalchin. But one second. The first line of the Braisa makes it sound like what? That if you don't establish a wage, then what? You can't do this at all. To which the Gemara says, Lo kasha, it's not a question. Ha de kavia beidoar bemasa. Ha de lo kavia beidoar bemasa. This is where, now, don't get confused with the modern Hebrew. We would think beidoar means a post office, right? So no, what it means over here is, look at Rashi for just a moment. Doar, Rashi says, Shilton Ha'ir. Doar was the ruler of the city. The mayor, he was the post office. The low regilin l'shlachi garas. Now here's what's interesting. So how did Doar become post office? Because interestingly enough, who usually got the most amount of mail in the city? The mayor, whatever, the guy, everybody sends their compliments, right? That's what people do. Everybody sends their compliments, their accolades. See, he got all of the mail. So the Gemara says like this. So, and David, this addresses your question as well. Shricha b'masa, Rashi says, Mishalchin below kitzetz. So ultimately, if the doar, if the ruler lives in the city, now listen to this, you can send a letter on Erev Shabbos, right? Assuming that, again, the non-Jews, according to this, Hillel has enough time to get to the first house within the wall of his city. According to Beis Shammai, has enough time to get to his home. So you could send the letter even without establishing a price. The reisha de'im mishalchin below kitzitz klal de'lo kaviyah b'masa v'im lo yin tse'eno yeitzarech leilich achara b'shabbos. The Gemara says like this. Here's the issue. Halach lemaisa, the Gemara suggesting is like this. That when the Braisa says Ein Mishalchin. Ein Mishalchin means what? Ein Mishalchin means that you can't, if you did not establish a price, and the Doar does not live in the city, you can't send the letter with the non-Jew on Erev Shabbos. Because what's the concern? That sin, if the non-Jew doesn't find the mayor of the city immediately, what is he going to do? He's going to go out looking for him. Which means that he'll end up doing this shlichos, bless you, for the Jew on Shabbos itself. But, if the doar is within the city, then what? Then halacha lemaisa, we allow the non-Jew to go ahead and do this shlichos for the Jew, as long as the doar is in the city, even if what? Even if no price has been established, as long as what? As long as halacha lemaisa, there's enough time for the agent, for the non-Jewish agent, according to Beis Hillel, to get to the first home within his wall of his city, according to Beis Shammai, to get all the way home. Tana Rabbanan. Ein mafligin b'svina pachos migimo yomim kol yom l'shabbos. So both sides. I want to just point out a quick idea just with this previous sugya, because I feel awkward leaving it to that. Any halacha l'maisa, one could engage a non-Jew to do malacha on Erev Shabbos. We paskin like basil, you could do malacha on Erev Shabbos, but one cannot create a situation where a non-Jew will have to do malacha for you on Shabbos. One is not permitted to do that. So for example, if one wants to drop their car off by the mechanic, so you can't drop your car off by the mechanic 5 minutes before Shabbos and expect to pick it up right after Shabbos, or expect to pick it up Sunday morning, because that is creating a situation where the non-Jew is going to do malacha for you. That is usur. What you could do, however, is you could drop it off on Erev Shabbos in the morning, right? Assuming there's enough time to get the repairs done in the morning, if the non-Jew decides that he doesn't want to work on it on Friday, but he wants to work on it on Saturday, that's his prerogative, because that goes b'didei katarach. It's his money, I'm paying him, I just want it done, and I've given it to him with enough time that he need not do it on Shabbos. If he chooses to do it on Shabbos, that's of his own prerogative.
Yeah, okay. Thing on your house.
No, house is problematic. House is more problematic, because a house, to have a non-Jew come and do malacha for you on your property on Shabbos is absolutely usur, unless, of course, there's an extreme need.
But what if there's just a week...
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. That's absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm sorry. There's no malacha in being a waiter or a waitress. How they get here is their problem. The act of waitressing, but the act of serving, there's no malacha involved in that. You can have Jewish waiters and waitresses. Absolutely. Why not? No malacha. You can't hire a non-Jew to do something you can't do. But technically speaking, you could waiter or waitress. So it's not a problem. I'm sorry?
You can't turn your ovens on and off the phone.
Correct. Correct. 100%. The non-Jew can't do anything you can't do on Shabbos.
Like, you could drop the car off the middle of Shabbos if you guys open on Sunday and you tell me.
Yeah, as long as you create a situation that allows for the malacha to be done without it having to be done on Shabbos, I don't have to ask the non-Jew, when are you fixing the car? That doesn't matter to me at all. But I just can't create a situation where malacha has to be done on Shabbos itself. Tan Rabbanan. Ein mafligin b'sina pachos migimul yamim. So we'll say, we talked about this a little bit between Mincha Ma'ariv last night. A person can't go ahead and embark on a boat journey less than 3 days prior to Shabbos. Less than 3 days prior to Shabbos. So we saw last night, interesting, the Gemara doesn't explain why. So we spoke out last night, the Mishnah Berurah advances a number of different approaches to this. One of them is the fact that halacha l'maisa, boat travel always required some level of, or had the potential of sakanas nefashos, right, of life-threatening. Now, obviously, if you're in a sakanas nefashos situation, you can go ahead and you could violate Shabbos, but better not to put yourself in that type of situation. Others say that it's because of the seasickness. First 3 days, people often got very seasick. If you're leaving within 3 days of Shabbos, then ultimately one is going to be seasick over Shabbos, and therefore, aloch l'maisa, one shouldn't do it. But when is this true? L'dvar harishus. This is only true for an optional matter, right? However, aval l'dvar mitzvah, shtap your dummy. But for mitzvah purposes, you are permitted to go ahead and get on the boat even within 3 days before Shabbos. We spoke this out last night also. But when you get on the boat, you have to go ahead and tell the captain that I'm getting on the condition that we dock for Shabbos. The Eino Shoveis, Divrei Rebbe. And that the idea is you make that declaration even though what? You know the boat's not, like, captain's not going to listen to you. But the idea is you make your intentional, meaning what you're saying essentially, as far as I'm concerned, I would rather not travel on Shabbos. The fact that the boat's going to travel on Shabbos once you're on it is really not problematic, but the idea is you have to make that declaration. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no, you don't. Eino tzarich, you don't have to make that declaration. Meaning, once you're on the boat, you're not doing the malach, you're not doing anything else, it's okay. Umitzur le tzidon afilu be'erev Shabbos mutter. And to go from tzur to tzidon, even on Erev Shabbos is mutter. Rashi points out over here that tzur to tzidon, Rashi says, ein ela mahalich yom. So apparently in Sidon they had the marketplace on Fridays, so you could sell from Tzur to Sidon even on Erev Shabbos, because again it's a shorter journey. Tana Rabbanan, Ein Sorin Al HaYoros Shal Nochrin Pachos Migimol Yom. Similarly, you may not go ahead and lay siege to a city, right, to a non-Jewish city that you're at war at, less than 3 days prior to Shabbos. Okay, and you shouldn't begin the siege within 3 days before Shabbos. The idea, so interesting enough, there's Vav bringing that over here, is the same idea that during the first 3 days of the siege is when it's most intense, and therefore one will pretty much erode any ability to have Onik Shabbos. V'imhischilu, but if you started, in mafsikin, you don't have to stop. V'chein ha'ya Shammai, Omer and Shammai used to say, ad ridita, that the Pasuk says when talking about going out to war, right, in Parshas, this I guess is Kisetze. Right, so in Parshas Kisetze, so the end of the Parsha, right, so the Torah says that you'll go ahead, it's by the fruit trees, right, you can't cut down the trees, you can't cut down any trees. So, Eitz Machal, so the Torah says that you'll go ahead and put the siege on the city, Ad Ridita is until you conquer it. So Bishamah essentially just backs up the previous assertion that once you start, don't stop. Fine. But Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, Nogin Hayu. So remember, Rav Shimon Gamliel says that as much as Rav Shimon Gamliel was a descendant of Hillel, nevertheless, he said that in our father's home, the tradition was that we did not give white garments to the launderer less than 3 days before Shabbos. Within 3 days before Shabbos, he wouldn't do it. Because the laundering process for white garments is quite extensive, therefore we gave it always 3 days before, at least 3 days before Shabbos. Tanya, I'm going to be tado kachayim in hago shabbos Rabbi Gamliel. This was the custom of the home of Rabbi Gamliel. Shainostin kliglava in lakovis kibliyom kodu Shabbos. They would give their white clothing. Apparently, it was more difficult to launder white clothing, so they would give it at least 3 days before Shabbos. Utzvuim afilu be'erev Shabbos, and colored clothing they would give over to the launderer even on erev Shabbos. Umedivreim lamadu, and from their words we learn shahalavanim kashim lakabzan yosem in atzvuim, that it's more difficult to launder white clothing than it is to launder colored clothing. Abaye havi yoiv le hahu mana de tzviya lekatzra. Abaye gave a colored garment to a launderer. Katzra is a launderer, to go ahead and clean it for him. Amar le kama bois iluye. So Abaye said to the launderer, "Knew how much? Right? Well, how much do you charge?" Amar le kidichiyuna. So the launderer said, "Oh, I change the same. I charge the same price for colored garments as I do for white garments." So Abaye says, "Amar le kvar kidamucha rabbanan." The rabbis already preempted you. Meaning the guy was trying to swindle Abaye a little bit. So Abaye, because he learned halacha, knew that it was more difficult to launder white clothing than it was to launder colored clothing, and therefore he says, your prices should not be the same. It's less work to launder the colored clothing, and therefore the rabbis already got to your prices before you. Amar Abaye, Hayman diyoev man alakatsra, b'mishcha nesivle. Abaye said that when you go in and you give a garment to a launderer to launder, make sure you measure the garment. Make sure you measure the garment when you give it to him. And make sure you measure the garment when you get it back. Because if when you get the garment back, the garment is larger than when you gave it to him, then what? Then it's clear that halacha l'maisa, the garment has been stretched out. And if the garment shrunk, clearly again it caused you a loss, because the launderer shrunk it. So remember again, the Mishnah said that both Bishav and Eilu agree that halacha l'maisa, one is permitted to go ahead and put the beans on top of the olives to squeeze out the oil, and to go ahead and put the circular beams on top of the grapes to squeeze out the grapes. Remember, you're doing this on Erev Shabbos, but the process will continue into Shabbos. Maishna kulu dugazru behu beishamai, umaishna koros, So the Gemara asks, Beis Shammai, why are you changing your tune over here? Why is it in all of the other cases you had a problem if Malacha was begun on Erev Shabbos and went into Shabbos, but yet over here you're okay with the cases of the olives and grapes? So the Gemara says, it's not a kasha. Hanach di avid luhu b'Shabbos mechayiv chatos. Gazruhu b'Shamay erev Shabbos im chashecha. Koros b'Sabat hagad v'igule hagati. Avid lehu b'Shabbos lo mechayiv chatos. Lo gazru. So the Gemara gives a very simple answer. B'Shamay is only concerned in what case? In cases of activities where if you did it on Shabbos itself, you would be chayiv chatos. You would be asur midoraisa. So for example, all the other cases, you put the wool into the dyer's vat, you mix the ingredients for inks, or for, and if you were to do these activities on Shabbos, it would be chayiv doraisa, it would be chayiv chatos. Therefore, Beis Shammai said, you may not begin these processes on Erev Shabbos and allow them to continue into Shabbos, but something that would not bring with it a chiyuv chatos on Shabbos, Beis Shammai is not goes around. Therefore, we spoke this out yesterday. Remember, the only time you have the chiyuv chatos for squeezing grapes and squeezing olives is when you do the first squeezing. When you do the first squeezing. But once you've done the first squeezing already, any subsequent squeezing is asr midrabanan, but not asr midaraisa. Because not asr midaraisa, that doesn't fall under the gzira of Beis Shammai. Therefore, Beis Shammai says you can begin on Erev Shabbos even if it goes into Shabbos. Remember, Rav says, as I mentioned yesterday, they would only use these presses, these beans, after the first squeezing. They'd squeeze out the initial squeezings from the olives and the grapes. And then what they would do is they would let them sit under the weight of these beans for a while, and everything else would ooze out. Man tana de chol midi de asim amela shapir dami. Who is the opinion who holds that halacha lemaisa, anything that happens by itself, on Shabbos is okay. Look at Rashi. De asim amela kegon mashkin halalo shenischatin me'elehem o bilvad sheyaschil mi ba'od yom. So for example, like these juices from the olives and from the grapes that will ooze out on their own over the course of Shabbos. So who is the opinion who holds that anything that happens on its own is mutter? Amr Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Rabbi Yishmal. It's Rabbi Yishmal. Why would Rabbi Yishmal say this nan? Hashum v'haboser v'hamalilos sheraskan li ba'od yom. If you have shum is garlic, boser is unripe grapes, malilos is also unripe grain, sheriskan, that you chopped up mi ba'od yom, while it was still Erev Shabbos. Rabbi Yishmal Omer, yigmar mishatech shach. Rabbi Yishmael says that halach lemaisa, you could allow the process to continue once it's dark. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at Rashi Yigmar. Me'achar sheriskan v'tzavram v'koved, yanichem v'kelem, v'yetzu ma'atzan amut l'chatchila. So Rabbi Yishmael says, if you chop these items up on Erev Shabbos, you'd be permitted to go ahead and, let's say, put them under the beam, on Erev Shabbos, and the juices would continue to flow out on Shabbos. Rabbi Kiva says, lo yigmar. Rabbi Kiva says, no, you can't do it. Rashi says, asr lahanichami ba'odyom tachas kovdon, kadei ligmar mishatech shach. So Rabbi says, the Gemara wants to suggest that Rabbi Yishmael, I should say Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, wants to suggest that this Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael is the major opinion who holds that as long as you begin the process on Erev Shabbos, even if it continues into Shabbos, it's totally okay. Rabbi Elazar Amar, Rabbi Elazar he. And this is Rabbi Elazar the Amora, says that no, it reflects the view of Rabbi Elazar the Tana. This man, Chalos Tavash Sheriskan, Chalos Tavash are honeycombs. If you have honeycombs that you crushed on Erev Shabbos, V'yatzmu me'atzman, and the honey then flows out on its own, Aser, it's Aser, look at Rashi. Chalos Dvash, actually, I have to look at Rashi. Rabbi Elazar Matir. And Rabbi Elazar says that it's Mutter. So I will say, what do you see from here? That Rabbi Elazar holds that if you begin a process, in this case, you crush the honeycombs on Erev Shabbos, then what? Then when the honey flows out over the course of Shabbos, it's Mutter. So Rabbi Elazar holds that a process that was begun by on Erev Shabbos and continues on its own into Shabbos is Mutter. So the Gemara says, by the way, Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, my Tamilomak Rabbi Elazar. Why does Rabbi Yossi not say like Rabbi Elazar? Right? You know, we'll say, here's one of these interesting things where they both actually agree on the bottom line. Right? Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Elazar both agree that the halacha is that if a process is begun on Erev Shabbos, it is allowed to continue on its own into Shabbos. What's their machlokas? The machlokas is, who is the source of this opinion? Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina says that it's Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Elazar, this is the easy one to remember, Rabbi Elazar says that it's Rabbi Elazar. Right? So the Gemara says, well, why doesn't Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina accept the fact that it's Rabbi Elazar? My timer lo mark Rabbi Elazar. Amr lecha, hasam hu de mi'ikara ochel, ulebasof ochel. You can't bring a rye from the honeycomb. You know why, Rabbosai? Because in the case of the honeycomb, the honey doesn't change form. Right? All you're doing over there is what? You're breaking open the comb. The honey is there. So you're just going ahead and simply take, you're almost opening up a blockage and allowing the honey to come out. That's when Rabbi Elazar says that if you begin the process on Shabbos, it can continue into Shabbos. Hacha me'ikara ochel v'hashta meshke. But here, right here, in the case of what? In the case of the grapes, is it's starting out as food, and you're really turning it into what? You're turning it into liquid. So therefore, what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina says is, in order to figure out whose opinion is reflected in the Mishnah, you need to have a case that's similar to the Mishnah. The Mishnah is dealing with grapes and olives, cases of where you're taking a food and extracting a liquid. It's not really a good comparison to the honeycomb, where the honey is in its same form in the beginning of this process and at the end of this process. Rabbi Elazar would say, Amalecha, Hashem inanei l'Rabbi Elazar, da'afilu zeisim va'anavim namishari. And Rabbi Elazar says, I've got that covered, because we have another braisa that indicates that Rabbi Elazar even holds this same concept by grapes and olives. Daha ki asa Rav Hoshea minarda, because when Rav Hoshea from Narda came, va'aisi mas nisa biyadei, he brought a Mishnah with him. And what was the Mishnah? Zeisim va'anavim shariska me'erev Shabbos. If you crushed olives and grapes on Erev Shabbos, v'yotzu me'atzman, and then ultimately the juices continue to flow out on their own. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Matirin. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon were Matirin. So both say, what do you see? Explicitly now, we have Rabbi Elazar on record as saying what? That if you began the process of crushing the grapes and the olives on Erev Shabbos, that the process is permitted to continue into Shabbos. So now we don't even have to. So what Rabbi Elazar would say is, Rabbi Chanina, if you don't like the honeycomb case, that's okay. That's because I've got another Mishnah that speaks about Rabbi Elazar talking about grapes and olives. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Braisa lo Shmiele. So apparently, the Braisa of the honeycomb case was more well known than the Braisa of the grapes and olives, to the point that even when Rabbi Elazar was trying to prove that Rabbi Elazar is the author or is the opinion reflected on a Mishnah, he drew on the most well known Braisa, which was the honeycomb one. It's only after Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina challenged him that he remembered, oh, there's another Mishnah also that speaks about grapes and olives. Rabbi Elazar, my time alone, Mark Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Elazar, who holds that the opinion is reflective of the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, why doesn't he hold like Rabbi Yossi, who holds that as Rabbi Yishmael? So the Gemara says, Amar lecha, lav itmar ala, Amar Rava bar Chanina, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, b'mechusarin dika. That's what's the case of Osai. When the item is missing dika, dika means pounding. Now we'll discuss that there are different parts in the process of crushing items to extract liquid. So when the item has not had dika pounding done to it, the kuli amalo pligi, everyone agrees that what? That it's aser. Everyone agrees that you can't do it. Look at Rashi. The mechusaran diki kuli amalo pligi, the asiri, the ti'inasan hi gomeres, v'nimtza kol asloi b'shabes. So both say, everyone agrees that if the grapes and olives have not yet been pounded, that's what? That you would not be permitted to go ahead and put the beam on the items on Erev Shabbos, because then it would be considered like the Ikar Malacha was being done on Shabbos. Ki pligi, so when do they argue? B'mechusaren shchika. B'mechusaren shchika. When ultimately it's missing, the shchika has not been done. So look at Rashi for just a moment. Shchika, yoser midika. Right, so shchika apparently, so I guess the way it used to work is the first step would be risuk, they would crush it, then there was dika, and then there was shchika. Rashi says, yoser midika, lashon odaka b'menducha, v'rav osai garsin, okay, I don't think we have to do all this. So skip down a little bit. Rav osai garsin ki pligi b'mechus, okay, skip down a few lines. V'hani demasnisin, mechusarin dika hein, uti'inasan hi dikasan hi shochkasan hi sochtasan. Ubaha Rabbi Shlomo did the aser. So I will say what Rabbi Elazar is suggesting over here is that the case of the Mishnah is a case of where the items have not yet had dika, have not yet had this pounding done to them, and therefore the Gemara says that Rabbi Elazar says that Rabbi Shmuel is of the opinion that when pounding has not yet been done to the grapes or to the olives, then what? Then it's usher to go ahead and put them underneath the beam to have the juices squeezed out. So he says, "Keep ligi de mechusaran shchika, v'haninami ki mechusaran dika damu, hor Rabbi Yosi bar Chanina k'Rabbi Yishmael." I'm sorry, that's the last part. So therefore, the Gemara says like this: Halacha lemaisa. Therefore, Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Chanina does not go ahead and I'm sorry, I missed this up. My time, Lomar Kosovo, we're asking why Rebbe Lazar, excuse me, why doesn't Rebbe Lazar adopt the position of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Hanina, that namely it's the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel that's reflected in the Mishnah, to which the Gemara answers, because Halacha Lemaisa, Rebbe Lazar felt that according to Rabbi Shmuel, the case of the Mishnah would ultimately be Aser. Because according to Rabbi Shmuel, you could only place the olives and the grapes underneath the beam after Dika, after pounding, and the case of the Mishnah is where Dika has not yet been done. Therefore, the Mishnah cannot reflect the view of Rabbi Yishmael. So the Gemara says, however, the Gemara ends off, Hora Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina paskin and upheld that the halacha follows Rabbi Yishmael, that Rabbi Yossi halacha lemaisa, as long as the process was begun on Erev Shabbos, even if the process will continue into Shabbos, halacha lemaisa it's mutter. Shemen shel bedadin, Umachatzalos shel bedadin. If you have wine, excuse me, oil shel bedadin. Rashi says over something very interesting. Shemen shel bedadin is literally oil of oil pressers, of olive pressers. Rashi points out over here that what would end up happening is that after they would press olives, the oil would come out, but there was always some oil left in the press. That oil traditionally was given to the workers, was given to the pressers. So if you have oil of pressers, umachatzalos shel bedadin, or the mats of pressers, look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, v'china machatzalos shel bedadin shemechasin b'hanas hazesim. When they would press olives, what they would also do is they would keep the olives covered, because apparently keeping it covered would generate more heat, and more heat would allow for the extraction of the oil to be easier. So there'd always be some oil on the mats also. So any oil left in the press, any oil left in the mats, ultimately was given to the pressers. So the Gemara says, well, what's the status of it on Shabbos? Right? What's the scenario of Osiris? Meaning, what does that mean? So remember, going back on our previous case, the oil is being pressed on Shabbos. The process was begun on Erev Shabbos, and now it's continuing into Shabbos. So what's going to be the Shaila? The Shaila is now, let's say the presser on Shabbos wants to take his olive oil from the press, or from the mats, is he permitted to do that? Rav says it's Osir. Rashi says, Rav Osir, L'taltulei mishum muktza. The Rav Savar Krabi Yehuda b'muktza, U'shmul Savar Krabi Shimon d'lesa muktza. So let me give you one word of introduction. Maybe we'll have to stop in a couple of moments. But one word of introduction with this, which is, there is a fundamental machlokas when it comes to muktza. A machlokas between, as Rashi points out over here, a machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. So literally, it means Rabbi Yehuda holds a muktzah, Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold a muktzah. Now, everybody holds a muktzah. But the machlokes is like this. Rabbi Yehuda takes a strict interpretation of muktzah, and Rabbi Shimon takes a lenient interpretation. How does that actually translate? According to Rabbi Yehuda, in order for an item not to be muktzah on Shabbos, you have to actively set it aside for Shabbos use. You have to actively say, I'm using this on Shabbos. And if you don't actively say, I'm using it on Shabbos, then what? It's muktzah. Rabbi Shimon says, no. Rabbi Shimon says, you don't have to actively do anything. Rather, what? We look at the item. If it's an item that's technically usable on Shabbos in a permitted way, then what? Then what? Then it's not muktzah. And if it's an item that's not really usable on Shabbos, then it is muktzah. That's the fundamental machlokes, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says, Rav says that the oil that's left in the presses is aser, or on the mats is aser, u'shmuel shari, and Shmuel says it's mutter. Rashi suggests that the machlokes, Rav and Shmuel, is really the machlokes, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in muktzah, that Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore again, because you didn't actively set aside the oil, therefore halacha lemaisa it's muktzah, and Shmuel is like Rabbi Shimon that it's mutter. So the Gemara says, Hani karchi de zuzi. Similarly, these karchi de zuzi, Rashi says, zug shamachatzalos. This refers to pairs of mats that were used to cover cargo in a ship. Rav aser, Rav says it's aser. Shmuel shari, Shmuel says it's mutter. Same idea, when you say aser over here, aser means muktzah, right? Mutter means not muktzah. Rav holds that it's muktzah because it wasn't actively set aside for use before Shabbos. Shmuel says it's mutter. Amar Rav Nachman, eiz lechalva v'racha legizasa, v'tarnagoles lebeitzasa, v'ture dirijja, v'tamri diiska. Similarly, what about all of these cases? If you have a goat that you use for milk, or you have sheep that you use for wool, or chickens that you use for eggs, or oxen that you go ahead and you use for plowing, or dates that you use for business, right? You're going to transact business with them. Rav says it's aser. Ushmuel says it's mutter. Rav, so what does that mean, Rav Osai? All of these items are set aside for commerce purposes. So because they're all set aside for commerce purposes, therefore Rav says, halach l'maisa, it's clear that it's mukta, right? Shmuel, who holds of a more lenient definition, will say that it's not mukta. We'll pick up over here. The Gemara is going to explain this in more depth tomorrow.